Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Kuf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Kuf Yud Tes, 5 lines from the top, the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, the Dibur Masil you find by the two dots. The Gemara makes reference to their having come Bo to Shiloh, and it said that when they were in Shiloh, Maaser Sheni was eaten B'chol HaRoya. Any point around Shiloh that from which Shiloh was visible would be suitable for the consumption of the Maaser Sheni tithe. And the Mishnah went on to say that Bo L'Nov V'Givon Hutru HaBomos. When they reach Nov and Givon, after the destruction of Shiloh, so private altars became allowed once again. There is no reference, though, in the Mishnah, when it comes to Nov and Givon, with regard to the eating of Maaser Sheni. The Gemara, Minohani Mili, from where do we know that there was an allowance, a Heter Bomos, after the destruction of Shiloh? The Tana Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic source. You can see that it's a Tanaic source by virtue of the fact that it's framed off, setting it aside from the rest of the Gemara literature, as is characteristic of our Gemara marking system. The Pasuk says, Ki loi bosem ad ato el hamenucha v'el hanachlo. In the days of Gilgal, it is said that you haven't as yet arrived at the menucha and the nachlo. What are these terms a reference to? So, El HaMenucha, Zu Shiloh. That when they were in Gilgal, the Pasuk reports that when you get to Gilgal, you have not reached yet Shiloh, Nachlo Zu Yerushalayim, nor have you reached Yerushalayim. Lomo Chilka Nakosuv, why does the Pasuk split between Shiloh and Yerushalayim? Answer, Kedei Litein Heter Bein Ze Loze. The fact that Shiloh is taught separately from Yerushalayim, it shows that after Shiloh, there will be reinstated a heter, an allowance for personal altars. If we notice the Rashi, who explains this a little bit more elaborately, Litein heter boma bein zeloseh, deha kro beheter bomas de Gilgal mishtoi. The topic of the Pasuk is dealing with the allowance of private altars in Gilgal. V'ka'omar, ad mosani oimer lochem, until when will the following apply? Ish kol hayosher be'inov. How long will that apply that a person is allowed to offer his personal, voluntary offerings on personal altars? Ki lo bosem ad ato, for you have not yet arrived at Shiloh. Avolo mishibosim, however, the allowance of voluntary offerings, nidorim and nidovas, on personal altars will not be allowed when you do arrive at Shiloh. V'i ein heter bein zu lezu, if there is in fact no allowance between Shiloh and Yerushalayim, which we know from the previous sugya is a 57-year period, havilei lemichtav, lo havilei lemichtav elo minucha. If the prohibition of personal altars starts from Shiloh and there is no allowance afterwards, all the Pasuk should have said was that you haven't arrived yet at the Menucha, which we associated with Shiloh. Umidichtiv Nachla, from the fact that the Torah makes reference to an additional place, Nachla, which we said was Yerushalayim, Shmavino Dohikomar Luhu, that thusly, we can conclude that thusly the Pasuk is saying, Achar Kedushas HaMenucha, after the sanctity of Menucha departs, namely the destruction of Shiloh, Tachsiru leheter horishon, the original allowance that was experienced at the time of Gilgal will return, ad boachem el hanachla, until you arrive at Nachla, which we mentioned was Yerushalayim. So we see from the doubling of places, Nachla and Menucha and Nachla, that there is an interim period of allowance of personal altars between Shiloh and Yerushalayim. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice a geometric form. We have a house form with the top or the roof facing upwards, and a few lines later it flips over, and this continues back and forth quite a ways down, more than halfway down the Omid. The Nosei Mivneh heading that you see on the outside margin, Nosei, the topic, Mivneh, the structural note that accompanies every sugi in our Gemara marking system. So we have the house featured, and we call it a ma'akav in parentheses, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth nature of the Gemara discussion. With the point facing up, they represents kushios, questions. Lomo ba Mishnah lo huzkar d'achrei churban Shilo. Why in the Mishnah does it not mention after the destruction of Shilo, sheyesh lecho ma'aser sheni benoy v'givon, that there is need for the eating of ma'aser sheni, the tithes taken from produce during the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the sabbatical, the Shemitah cycle? Why is there no reference to the need for the eating of Ma'aser Sheni in the Nov and Givon? The Mishnah did make reference to the eating of Ma'aser Sheni in the vicinity of Shiloh, but when it came to its reference to Nov and Givon, the Mishnah was silent with regard to the Ma'aser Sheni. So, turning to the Gemara, Omalei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. We should have mentioned, of course, that the house form inverted is a reference to the tshuvas, to responses. So back to the Gemara, Amar Lei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan I Hachi. If this be the case that there's a shas heter after the destruction of Shiloh, so then Ma'aser Sheni Nami Lisni. It should have taught also that the bringing of Ma'aser Sheni to Nov and Givon. After all, the Kedusha, the sanctity of Shiloh, departed, so there's no need to bring the Ma'aser Sheni to the area of Shiloh anymore. So why not have a reference to the eating of Ma'aser Sheni in the area of Nov and Givon? Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan answers. Now we've noted this as number one, because the answer that Rabbi Yochanan gives here, it seems that as a result of the Gemara's kasha, very shortly, that means the Reish Lakish's kasha on him, where the house form repositions itself, Rabbi Yochanan then gives a second approach a few lines later, where the second inverted house form appears. So that's why we've labeled this number one. This is, we'll call it, the first stage in Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Meiser, the issue of the Meiser tithe, Shom me'oroin koyalfi. It's learned or derived, the way we treat the Meiser is derived through a word comparison, a gezerah shava, using the word Shom from the case of the Oroin. Kevon do Oroin lo have, since in the case of Nov and Givon, the Oroin was not there. The Oroin was, as we noted on our timeline from the previous sugya, for the first 20 years after Churban Shiloh, the Oron was located in Kiryas Yorim. So, since the Oron wasn't there in Nov and Givon, Meiser Nami Lo Havoy, by virtue of the word comparison of Shom Shom from the Oron, we say, just like the Oron wasn't there, there's no need to have Meiser Sheni with regard to Nov and Givon, to be brought to Nov and Givon. Ihachi, if the limud, the conclusion of Ma'aser Sheni, is derived through a word comparison of Shom Shom from the Oron, then Pesach v'kodshim nami de Shom Shom me'oron yalfi de kevon de Oron lo havi inhu nami lo havu. Well then, you ought to conclude that Pesach and other, the Korban Pesach and other Korbanos also should not be offered at Nov and Givon, because in the context of those sacrifices, you find the word Shom, and you find the word Shom with the Aron, as we just mentioned. So if there was no Aron, there should be no sacrifices offered there either, and we know that's not true. So the question comes back, why is it that the Mishnah does not make reference to Ma'aser Sheni in the context of Nov and Givon? Omar Lei, Sir Rabbi Yochanan answers, the Omar Lo Chomoni, that I will tell you that the Mishnah that indicated that when they came to Nov and Givon, the Ma'aser Sheni was eaten b'chol orei Yisrael. This is Rabbi Shimon he. This is in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. The Mishnah had taught when they came to Noiv and Givon, so in addition to the fact that the private altars were allowed, the Kotchim Kalim and Meiser Sheni was not limited to the vicinity of Noiv and Givon, as was the case with regard to Shiloh, where there was a limitation, but rather they were eaten b'chol orei Yisrael. So that opinion that's reflected by our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is answering here in this second stage of response. Ha'amoni, the Mishnah that said when they came to Noiv and Givon, the Meiser Sheni was eaten b'chol orei Yisrael and all this, any town of Israel. So that's Rabbi Shimon. He diyamar af tzibor lo hikrivu ela pesach v'chovis hakavu lahem zman. Rabbi Shimon himself said that with regard to the type of sacrifices offered on the central altar, it was limited, as we saw, Shitas Rabbi Shimon. We already saw this in the Brisa that began on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, and Rabbi Shimon's opinion appeared at the lower part of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, that even the public didn't offer a wide range of sacrifices in Noiv and Givon. They were, as far as obligatory sacrifices are concerned, they were limited to Korban Pesach and Chovos HaGevulim Zman, which the Gemara in the previous sukkah said was a reference to obligatory Olos offerings. But that's it. Aval Chovos She'en Kevulahem Zman, but obligatory offerings that don't have a fixed time for being brought. We cited a few examples in our previous sukkah, for example, a Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibor or Si'irei Avodah Zarah, which are not calendar-related obligatory korbanos. Hacha v'hacha lo korev. They're not offered certainly not at the private altars and not at the public altar in Noiv and Givon either. Umayser behema, the example of a Maiser behema, the tithing of animals, is Choyvois She'en Kavua Lohen Zman Hu. It's an example of an obligatory type offering that does not have a fixed calendar date. The Iskish Maiser Dogon the Maiser behema. And we know from Psukim that Maiser, the tithe of grain, is compared to the tithing of animals. So since the animals were classified, the Maiser Behemah is classified as Chovos She'en Kavua L'Zman and were not offered in Noiv and Givon, Maiser Sheni likewise is not restricted to the area of Noiv and Givon. That was Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Rabbi Shimon has a Bar Plukta, an opinion that disagrees with him. That opinion happens to be Rabbi Yehuda. Michlal de le Rabbi Yehuda Karev, are we to infer that Rabbi Yehuda would say that the Meiser Behema is offered, are offered in Meiser Behema, the Chovos She'en Kavua L'Zman are offered in Noiv and Givon? The more answer is in. That's in fact the case. The Omar of Ado Bar Matona, Meiser Sheni, Meiser Behema, Necholin, Benoiv and Givon, the Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So you have here a reference to the Meiser Behema, which is a Chov She'en Kavua L'Zman, is eaten in the area of Noiv and Givon. It's restricted to that area. The Gemara asks, but the ha boi bira. The term bira is an expression that is relates to a divine dwelling, divine presence, and a divine dwelling. The concept of bira is associated with the pasuk that says lifnei Hashem Elokechem. So the question here is that the feeling is that Noiv and Givon was not a place that there had been a divine dwelling. So being that it's lacking this element of lifnei Hashem Elokechem, how can you suggest that Meiser Behema would be in fact eaten in the area of Noiv and Givon? The Gemara answers, V'lav Toni Rav Yosef, but didn't Rav Yosef teach Shalosh Biros Hain? There were three situations of Bira. Bira, we meant, was a divine dwelling. And they were Shiloh, Vino v'givon, they go together, and ubei salamim, the Beis HaMikdash. So that's Rav Yosef's teaching. Hu tani law, hu omar law. He taught over this Tanaic source, and he also explained lachilas meiser sheni valiba the Rebbe Yehuda. This idea that there were three biros is a teaching with regard to meiser sheni, that meiser sheni shall be brought to the area of Nov and Givon, and the teaching conforms to the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda. And we saw that before, that according to Rebbe Yehuda, even Meiser Behema is brought at Nov and Givon, even though it's an Ein Kavur Lozman. It's a Chov, She'ein Kavur Lozman. This is in opposition to Shitas Rabbi Shimon, which we mentioned earlier, that holds Chovos She'ein Kavur Lozman are not brought at Nov and Givon, and as a result of that, Meiser Sheni also would not be restricted to Nov and Givon. Bo Yerushalayim v'chulei. As we go on in the Gemara, we'll notice a Tanaic source. You can see that's in a frame. There's also a double underline with dots in it. So on the outside margin, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, we have this double underline with dots in it featured. This is highlighting the expressions Zu Shiloh and Zu Yerushalayim. We will see four Deos Tanoim al Pirush Menucha v'Nachla. Four opinions of Tanoim, how to explain the expressions Menucha v'Nachla. Nafgamina legabi mosai chal iser bamos. The way it's explained, these two expressions are explained, we will be able to determine when the prohibition of private altars set in. Then we'll go on in the Gemara and see a crown marking, and this will highlight the expression bishlama lemanda omar, that things will work out according to one manda omar, but what about the other? So the Gemara continues with the Braisa. Tan Rabbanan, ki lo bosem ad ato el ha-menucha ve'el ha-nachla. Menucha zu shilo, nachla zu Yerushalayim. This is an expression or an opinion we saw reflected above. The Omer, and the Gemara, the Braisa brings in a couple of psukim wherein you see the term nachla used in conjunction with Yerushalayim. The pasuk says, hoiso li nachlosi ka'arye biyar. The Omer ho'ayet savua nachlosi li ho'ayet saviv aleho. So in these two psukim, the word nachlosi appears, and if one understands the depth of the psukim, the term nachlosi is a reference to Yerushalayim. So you see nachla is associated with Yerushalayim, divrei Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Shimon Omer, menucha zu Yerushalayim. Notice the switch around. He holds that the menucha is a reference to Yerushalayim, and nachla, the later word in the pasuk, Zu Shiloh is a reference to Shiloh, which was an earlier structure. V'yomer zos menuchosi adead po eshev ki ivisiha. So we see the word menuchosi used in the context with a reference to Yerushalayim. V'yomer ki bochar Hashem b'tzion ivo lemoishav lo. You can see in this pasuk the term tzion, which is a clear reference to Yerushalayim, and the word ivo, which we saw just before, Ivisiha, the similar word. And so if you combine these two psukim, you can see that Tzion, which is Yerushalayim, is associated with Menuchasi, with place called with Menucha. So that Rav Shimon says, from this psuk combination, we see that Menucha is a reference, in fact, to Yerushalayim. Bishlama, the Gemara now goes over these opinions. Bishlama lamanda omar menucha zu shilo. According to Rabbi Yehuda, things are smooth insofar as menucha being called a reference to shilo. Hainu dichtiv, therefore, I can understand the order of the pasuk, which says el hamenucha de la nachla. First, shilo, which is historically the case, and then afterwards, Yerushalayim. Elo lamanda omar, but according to the second opinion, namely that of Rabbi Shimon, Menucha zu Yerushalayim, nachla zu shilo. According to that, then the pasuk should have said el hanachla vel menucha, because according to this opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, that menucha is a reference to the later to Yerushalayim, meaning the later structure. So the pasuk should have followed the order of history by saying, using the word nachlo, which is a reference to the earlier shiloh, before making a reference to menucha. So the Gemara answers,
Let's read the question again. It's El HaNachlav HaMenucha MiBoyaleh. It should have said it that way. So how does Rabbi Shimon understand the pasuk that says El HaMenucha VeEl HaNachla, when Menucha is, according to Rabbi Shimon, a reference to Yerushalayim? Hachi Ko'amar. Thusly, you to understand things. Lo MiBaya Menucha DeLo Matisu. I don't have to tell you that you haven't reached Menucha, the later place. Ela filu lenachla nami lo matisu. But you haven't even reached Nachla yet. So as until that point in time, you have a heter for personal altars. But once you reach the next stage, the stage of Shiloh, the personal altars will be forbidden. So at this point, the Pusuk can make sense both according to Rabbi Yehuda, which follows, the Pusuk follows a simple chronological area, and according to Rabbi Shimon, the Pusuk is in a lo mibaya structure, what we call the I don't have to tell you format. The third approach, Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, you can see we've circled the different approaches and assigned numbers to them to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, so this is number 3. Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Zu Vizu Shiloh. The terms Menucha and Nachla are references to Shiloh. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Zu Vizu Shiloh, Ve'afilu Hachi, Yesh Heter Basra. Even though both references are to Shiloh, nevertheless, one should realize that there is an allowance of personal altars after the destruction of Shiloh. The Kosovar Kedusha Rishona Kitcha L'Shaita V'lo Kitcha L'Osid Lavo. The initial sanctity that was enjoyed by Shiloh, which had a restrictive capacity to it with regard to personal altars, was a temporary type of restriction, and we call that in this case a kedusha sanctity, a temporary sanctity, but not binding forever. Pegedushas Yerushalayim gufas svirule diyeshachrei heter. This Shita, the Shita we just cited, the Tana Debei Shmuel, is very far going. He says that even with regard to Yerushalayim, there is a heter of personal, there's an allowance made for personal altars after the destruction of Yerushalayim. Kinamrinam b'Megillah, where the Gemara Megillah says, Shemadi Shemakriven b'Beis Chonyo b'Zmanazeh, Fukimno k'Rabbi Shmuel, where the Gemara says that it was heard that one is allowed to offer sacrifices in Beis Chonyo, which is outside the Beis HaMikdash, which was a temple built in Egypt. And that allowance being that the Kedusha imposed on Yerushalayim was not of a permanent nature. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Shimon ben Chai Omer, Zu Vizu Yerushalayim, that Menucha Nachla are both references to Yerushalayim. And according to this approach, until the Beis HaMikdash, there was no prohibition of personal altars. As we go on, we analyze the different opinions, and we'll feature the beginning of the analysis with a little crown form. And this begins, Bishlamo l'madomar menucha zu shiloh, and nachlo zu sholayim. That approach makes sense. And before we go too much further, we should note that we have a type of long marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. We want to give you the feeling that the Bishlamo lasts, and it builds up to a question. And that is indicated by the length marker over here. So the first opinion that said, Menucha Shiloh and Nachla Yerushalayim is smooth, Inami, Ipcha, even if you say the other way around, that Menucha is Yerushalayim and Nachla is Shiloh, it's also okay. Hainu Dichtiv, El HaMenucha VeEl HaNachla. The breaking up of the two expressions shows us that it's a reference to two different places. Elo, Leman Diomar, Zuvazu Shiloh o Zuvazu Shlaim, according to opinions 3 and 4, that the Menucha Nachla expressions are two words referring to the same place, whether it be Shiloh or being Yerushalayim. Menucha v'nachla miboyalei. It would have been more appropriate to use the Pusuk should have said Menucha v'nachla. In other words, Kilo Bosem Arata el HaMenucha v'hanachla. Why does it separate them with the word El, or Ve'el? So this is Kashya. This is left as a technical difficulty. Bishlamo Lamanda Omar Zuvazu Shilo. According to the things could work out according to the third opinion that both references are to Shilo. Menucha Nachla are both Shilo. Menucha, how are both expressions descriptions of Shilo? So Menucha equals the Nachu Mikibush. At that point they had completed the division of the land, so they were able to rest from the conquering. And Nachla, it's on based on the Palgu Hosam Nachlos, that in Shiloh there was a division of the different tribes. Dichtiv vaychalek lehem Yeshua vayapel lehem gerul b'Shiloh al pi Hashem. So, with this in mind, the term Nachlo, meaning an inheritance, is a term appropriate to be associated with Shiloh, because that was the place that the lots were drawn, and thereby determining who receives what chelek. Ela, Lamanda Omar Zuvazu Shalayim, according to the fourth opinion that said Menucha and Nachla are both references to Shalayim, I can understand Bishlamo Nachla equals Nachla Zalomim. I understand Yerushalayim being described as with the word Nachla because it's a Nachla that is for all generations. The Gemara on the second line from the top, once again, Elo Lamanda Omar Zu Vazu Shiloh. Ozu vezu Yerushalayim. According to the opinions 3 and 4, that Menucha and Nachlo were references to both words were references to either Shiloh or, according to opinion 4, to Yerushalayim. The lashon of the Gemara should have been Menucha. The lashon of the pasuk should have been Menucha v'Nachlo miboyale. We saw before that the splitting up of the places with the word ve'el indicated a point of heter between the two points of prohibition. But if both words, menucha and nachlo, are references to the same point, to the same place, so there's no need for sticking in the word of ve'el indicating a point in between two different places. So this particular point of why the word ve'el is there, even though both words refer to the same place, is kashya, is left as a technical difficulty. The Gemara continues with its analysis. Bishlamo lemandomer zu vezu shilo. According to opinion 3, that Menucha and Nachla are references to Shiloh, we can explain both words as descriptions appropriate to Shiloh. Menucha means denochu mikibush, that they rested, they finished the conquest. Nachla equals depalgu hosam nachlos, that they divided the inheritance, the different portions of the land, and the word nachlo is associated with inheritance. Dichtiv vayachalek lehem Yeshua vayapil lehem gerul b'shilo al pi Hashem. So that you see with our dashed underline, the word nachlo is associated with Shilo. So hence, both words, menucha and nachlo, are appropriate descriptions of Shilo. Elo lamandi omar zu v'zu Yerushalayim, according to the fourth opinion that menucha and nachlo were references to Yerushalayim. So, bishlamo nachlo, the word nachlo can be understood, nachlas oilamim, a permanent inheritance. In other words, after Yerushalayim, there is no other place that there would be a Beis HaMikdash. Ela menucha, my menucha. But as far as menucha is concerned, what is the relevance or association of that word with Yerushalayim? The Gemara answers, there is. Menuchas Aron. This was the final resting place for the Aron. Dichtiv, Vayhi Kenoyach HaOron. So we see that the term Menucha is associated with the Aron, and that's what Yerushalayim was. It was the final resting place for the Aron, for the Holy Ark that contained the Luchos. Bishlamo Lamanda Omar Zubazu Yerushalayim. Things can be understood according to the fourth opinion that Menucha and Nachlo were references to Yerushalayim. Aval, Shilo, Have Sharia, Bamos. But in Shilo, Bamos were allowed. If we glance at Rashi on Omed Aleph, at the end of the Omer that says Zu Vazu Yishalayim, Rashi there points out the bottom of Kuf Yud Tes Omer Aleph, the Ad Shibona Habayis Lo Nesru Habomos, according to this opinion, that until Yishalayim, until the Beis Hamikdash in Yishalayim, Bomos were not forbidden. They became forbidden only upon arriving at Yishalayim. So, with that approach in mind, that's the approach number four, that both words, Menucha Nachlo, are references to Yerushalayim, and that Shita, once again, we repeat, holds that that private altars were allowed throughout the Shiloh period as well. So, Av Hainu Dichtiv, with that, we can understand by the pasuk that says, "Vayikach Manoach es gedio izim ves hamincha vayal al hatsur l'Hashem." Manoach was the father of Shimshon. This was an event where Manoach offered a sacrifice on a rock, meaning a private altar, a private altar, not in Shiloh, and that would fit in very well with this approach that private altars were totally allowed. But according to the opinion that says Menucha and Nachla are references to Shiloh, and at that point private altars became forbidden. So my Vayikach Manoach, what is meant by, or how are we to understand the offering of a private sacrifice, offering of a sacrifice at a private altar on the part of Manoach? The Gemara answers: true, there in fact is a prohibition. However, Hiruas Shohoisa, it was a one-time special allowance made. This is a term that you find in the Shas under different circumstances, referring to different occasions that a special allowance is made. That's called Hiruas Shoh. But in general, we are to understand that in fact, according to this approach, Bomos were forbidden at the time of Shiloh. Tana Debe Rabbi Yishmael, the yeshiva of Rabbi Yishmael, let's just remind ourselves before we go on, we saw Rabbi Yishmael himself, we saw him referred to as opinion number three that said Menucha Nachlo were references to Shiloh. However, the Gemara here points out that in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yishmael, Tono Debei Rabbi Yishmael, Ke Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi, the school of Rabbi Shmuel adopted the approach taken by Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, was our fourth opinion, who said that Zu v'Zu Yerushalayim. The Simonech, and in order to remember this change in events, so to speak, or change of opinions, namely whereby the school, numerous students in the yeshiva Rabbi Shmuel adopted the opinion of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, you can remember that phenomenon by the following: Mashchinhu Gavro leGavri, which literally means that the man drew the men, plural. So that it's as if to say that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who was a singular, drew to his side, to his opinion, the school of Rabbi Shmuel. Kol HaKochim V'chulei. The reference that we're making right now is to the case of sacrifices that were sanctified at a time in history that private altars were allowed, and the offering of it took place, after the Bomos became forbidden. And the Mishnah said that something like that, a case like that, where something was sanctified at the time of Heter Bomos and offered on a private altar, though that those very things sanctified at the time of private altars being allowed, but the actual burning of the sacrifice, the offering up of the sacrifice, took place. Private altars became forbidden. So our Mishnah said that was a violation of a negative command, but it did not involve kores.
This was found on Kuf Yud Beis Omid Beis, the lower part of the page. If one has access to Kuf Yud Beis Omid Beis, one can notice the number 2 underlining, where it said Hikdishon B'Shas Heter Bomos V'Grivon B'Shas Isser HaBomos B'Chutz. It was dealing with a sacrifice sanctified at the time that personal altars were allowed, and its offering was already, he didn't offer it immediately, but rather finally offered it at the time that the bomos became forbidden. But there is no kores prohibition. On this, Rav Kahana will qualify or limit the exemption from the severe kores penalty. He will limit that to the issue of the shechita, to the slaughtering outside of the central mishkan or central mizbeach. Before we go further in the Gemara itself, let's glance at our topic heading in the outside margin, the nosei. Dinoi Shel Rav Kahana will feature the teaching, the halacha of Rav Kahana. Hadikotoni legabi hiktish b'shas heter bomos v'grifon b'shas iser habomos b'chutz. Regarding the sanctification of sacrifices at the time that personal altars were allowed and the offering of them, of those very sacrifices, after the prohibition of personal altars set in, the Mishnah taught the Ein Bo Kores. Rav Kahana will tell you, Hainu Legabi Shechita, that's with regard to the slaughtering. Aval Al Halo Chayev Kores. But if one continues after the slaughtering to actually burn the sacrifice outside of the central Mizbeach, at this time when Bomos became Osir, there will be a Chiyuv Kores for that act, for the act of Ha'aloh. The Gemara will, of course, try to find out where does Rav Kahana know that from. So let's turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Kahana, Lo Shanu Ela B'Shchita, the teaching of the Mishnah that for this case that there is no Kores, that's true only with regard to the slaughtering of the animal outside the Mishkan at this time when the Bomos became Osir. So we say that since you're slaughtering an animal that was sanctified when there was a heter, when there was an allowance for the bomos, the slaughtering is, although forbidden now, but does not carry with it a kores penalty. Avol b'halah, but as far as continuing and burning the korban in offering it up, kores nami mechayev. There, in fact, is also a kores penalty. My taimo. What's the reason or the basis for Rav Kahana? The Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, with regard to Ha'aloh, the Alehem Tomar. Al Hasmuchim Tomar. The Rashi explains, the Alehem Tomar, Gabi Ha'aloh Ksiv. This Pasuk is in the context of Ha'aloh, in its Perek Vayikra, Perek Yud Zayin, Posuk Ches, and there it says, V'aleyam Tomar, and it continues in the Posuk to say, Asher Ya'ale Olo Zavach, and in Posuk Tes, it features a Kores penalty. So, this Posuk Rashi points out, U'bosur Hai Kro, Da'airi B'shochi Kochim, Shigdishon b'shas heter bomos v'shochton b'shas iser v'lo yizbuchu oid du kimna b'hochi. This posuk of Valeim Tomar, which is posuk Ches, is coming on the heels of a sacrifice that was slaughtered at a personal altar, and we already established that this posuk Zayin was talking about a sacrifice that was sanctified initially at the time of an allowance of personal altars and sacrificed at the point that personal altars became forbidden, and he slaughtered it outside of the central altar. Nevertheless, Pasuk Ches goes on to teach about the offering up of that very sacrifice. And in Pasuk Tes, we see that there is a Chiyuv Kores. The Gemara asks a question. This is a long question. You can see from the length indicator, the kuf that's encircled, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line. The conclusion of this entire question ends up as, if you skip to the end of the long question mark, you see a Tiufta de Rav Kahana, where the Gemara says we have a solid repudiation of Rav Kahana. Namely, Rav Kahana is teaching us a stringency, that there is a chiyuv kares for the ha'alah of something that you sanctified b'shas heter bamos, and was malid after the shas iser set in, but and he was basing himself on posuk, the fact that posuk ches says ve'aleihem tomar, giving the impression that this that posuk ches is a continuation of posuk zayin. And that understanding would be by looking at the word va'aleihem as if it meant, as if it were spelled with an ayin, meaning an upon that which was mentioned in Zion, we superimpose the teaching of Pasuk Ches. On this point, the Gemara attacks. Maskif lo rabo. Rabo asks, he says, Miksiv ve'aleihem tomar. Does it spell the word with an ayin, which would mean upon, like, in other words, superimpose the events or the situation of Ches, Pasuk Ches, on that which was mentioned in Pasuk Zion? But it doesn't say that. Ve'aleihem ksiv, it's spelled with an aleph, meaning that you're talking to the people, you're turning to the people. Ve'oid tanya, and furthermore, we have a Tanaic source, and in this Tanaic source there are a number of details, but with our markings we've attempted to feature the main point, and you can see with an arrow that's found a bit down from here to the right hand side of the Gemara text, you see it's pointing to a line where it says V'ein bohen kores. This will be contrasted with the arrow above under Rav Kahana's teaching where it said kores nami mechayev. We'll understand this much more clearly as we go into the source, but before that we want to take note of the diamonds that will appear under our Mivneh heading on the outside margin. The word Hikdishon is featured in a diamond. Arbat Kufos, four periods, historical periods. Be'iser Veheter Bamos, Upulosov Bahen. The different time periods, sometimes allowances, sometimes prohibitions, and what takes place at each juncture. So we continue in the question on Rav Kahana by citing this brisa, in which, as we said, you'll find information contradicting him. The Ode Tanya, Arbo Klolos Hoya Rabbi Shimon Omer Bekotchim, four categories Rabbi Shimon used to teach with regard to sacrifices. One, Higdishon, something that was sanctified Bishas Isir Habamos, Vishochat Vehelo Bishas Isir Habamos Bachutz. One sanctified and offered up a sacrifice from beginning to end, you were within the time period of private altar prohibition. If one does so anyway, Arehein Be'ase Velosase V'yesh Bo'en Kores, he's in violation of all three counts. He's in violation of a positive command, he's in violation of the negative command, and he also bears a Kores penalty. Number two, Higdishon Bashas Heter Habamos V'shachvela Bashas Isra Habamos Bachutz. We should point out that this section is the section that represents a problem, that will represent a problem for Rav Kahana, because we're describing the same case Rav Kahana described, namely sanctification at the point of Boma allowance and offering at the point of Boma prohibition. Hare Hain. And we should point out also that we are emphasizing the word ha'alah with a dotted underline, and we saw that Rav Kahana also used the word Baha'u'llah, which we have a dotted underline. Here you see Veha'u'llah, and it says the conclusion of this is Harehein Ba'ase Velo Sase V'ein Bohen Kores. Here it says clearly that there is no Kores penalty, contrary to Rav Kahana. Section 3 and 4 are not significant for our discussion, but we continue reading anyway. Higdishon b'shas iser habamos, b'shal velo b'chutz b'shas heter habamos. If something had been sanctified when personal altars were forbidden, but when he came to actually slaughtering and offering it up, he did so when personal altars became allowed. Hare hein be'asei v'ein bohen b'los aseh. There is only a positive violation. There is no violation of any negative commands. And number four, Higdishan b'shas heter habamos v'shachav elo b'shas heter habamos poter miklum. This fourth case is rather obvious, but it's probably taught to complete the picture, that if he sanctified and offered all during the time of Boma allowance, so he's exempt from anything. There's no violation whatsoever. But as we saw in the source, a problem for Rav Kahana. Tiyufta de Rav Kahana, tiyufta. This appears to be a repudiation of Rav Kahana, and thus it remains. Therefore, if one sanctified something, b'shas heter bomos, even though he didn't offer it immediately, but rather waited, and he shechted it and offered it up and burnt it after the iser bomos set in, he is in violation of an aseh and a los aseh, but he is not going to be guilty of a kores penalty. The Mishnah went on to teach what are the differences between Bomas Yochid and Bomas Tzibur. So a reference was made to a series of things. Mishnah that was featured at the very bottom of Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis mentioned that Mabein Bomas Yochid Bomas Tzibur Smicha Shchitas Tzafon Matan Soviv Tnufa Hagosha. The Gemara here addresses those elements and tries to show the source for these different points. So the need for smicha and a number of other things was not necessary when dealing with a personal altar. Why are these things limited to the central altar alone? So before we go on in the Gemara, we also have a Nosei Mivneh heading that accompanies this sukkah on the outside margin. You see a double underline. Dvarim she'enom noegim b'boma. Things that are not noeg, that are not practiced, b'bomas yochid, at a private altar. Smicha is not practiced. The placing of the hands of the owner on the korban, dechtiv, the pasuk says, lifnei Hashem v'samach. The Lifnei Hashem is the end of Posuk Gimel there in Vayikra Perek Aleph, and Vesamach is the beginning of Posuk Dalek. So, by the placing of Vesamach next to Lifnei Hashem is a reference to the central location and not to the exclusion of a private altar. Shvita Safon, the need to sacrifice to slaughter in the northern part of the courtyard, Dichtiv Tzafono Lifnei Hashem, the need for Tzafon, which is characteristic of a koche kochim, which would be applicable to the case of a korban ola, that the necessity of having it slaughtered in the northern part of whatever, that's true with regard to the mishkan, but not with regard to a private altar, as the pasuk indicates, lifnei Hashem as well. Matonos saviv, blood applications around the mizbeach, dichtiv, that's only by the central altar, not by a private altar, dichtiv, vizorak, Esadam ala mizbeach saviv. And the end of the pasuk says, Asher pesach oil moyed. The need for the blood sprinkled around the mizbeach on the different sides of the mizbeach, that's only with regard to the mizbeach, that's pesach oil moyed. Tenufa, the need for the waving of different sacrificial elements. That's also only in the case of the central mizbeach d'chtiv, v'heinif akoin lifnei Hashem. Hagosha d'chtiv. With regard to hagosha, this is the drawing near of a meal offering to the corner of the mizbeach. This does not take place when you're dealing with a private altar. The Rashi suggests a girsa that's different from the what you see in the Gemara, and hence if you look at the starred section in Rashi, we have a squiggle underline nearby, that point, where it says, Hakrev oisa lifnei Hashem. That's a reference, Hakrev is a reference to the act of Hagosha, of drawing the bowl of the meal offering to the corner of the Mizbeach. That's called Hagosha, and that does not apply when you're dealing with a personal altar. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Mincha B'Boma. according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no mincha to begin with at a personal altar. Omer Rav Sheshes, the divrei ha'omer yesh mincha bebama, yesh oifos bebama. According to the opinion that holds that a mincha could be brought at a bama, he would hold that bird offerings are also brought at a bama. The divrei ha'omer ein mincha bebama. If you're of the opinion, like we saw, Rabbi Yehuda, that there's no meal offerings done at personal altars, private altars, ein oifos bebama. Likewise, there will be no bird offerings at a bama. And why is that? So the reason for this is the Pasuk says in Vayikra, Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Hey, we've noted on the side of the Gemara, the Pasuk says, Vizavchu Zivchei Shlomim Lashem Oysam. The word Zivachim, Zevach, is a reference to something that's slaughtered. And the Gemara Darshans, though it uses the word Zvachim, the Pasuk itself actually says Vizavchu Zivche. Nevertheless, we can infer there's a sort of a limitation here. Zvachim, that is what's done at a personal altar. Velo Menachos. Zvachim is to the exclusion of Menachos. Zvachim, Veloi Oifos. And likewise, Zvachim is a reference, as we said, to something sacrificed, something slaughtered with a knife, which is in distinction and contrast to Ophos, whose method of slaughtering was through a thumbnail of the Kohen. That's called Malika, and not Shvicha or not Zavicha. The Kohen. We continue in our list of things that were not practiced at a personal altar. The restriction of having a Kohen. That's only by the central altar, not by personal altars. Dichtiv, Vizarak, HaKoyhein. The Rashi continues this pasuk. You can see where there's a double star in the Rashi. It says Vizarak HaKoyhein Es Adam Al Mizbach Hashem Pesach. So once again, we see that this is a reference to the special Mizbech, the Mizbech Hashem, not a personal altar. Big day shoreis, the need of wearing the big day kohen, that's big day shoreis. It says l'shoreis bakodesh, that's necessary only when dealing with sacrifices in the mishkan, but not at a personal altar. Ukli shoreis, special service vessels. The need for kli shoreis, these are sanctified vessels, that's asher yishorsu bom bakodesh. Once again, that's a reference to the mishkan, but not a need when dealing with a personal altar. The Reach Nichoyach. This concept is explained by Rashi that was seen at the on the Mishnah. The Reach Nichoyach is a phenomenon of making sure that one offers raw limbs onto the Mizbeach to the exclusion of limbs that were roasted prior to their being put on the Mizbeach. Limbs like that do not produce this pleasant smell, is what the basic translation of Reach Nichoyach is, because they've already been roasted. So the need for the placing of raw limbs on the Mizbeach, in the case of offering up of a sacrifice, this restriction is to only in the case of the central Mizbeach. As the Pasuk says, L'reach nichoach l'ashem, the emphasis on l'ashem. Mechitza bedamim. This too was mentioned in the Mishnah, that the need to distinguish between sacrifices whose blood is sprinkled on the upper part of the Mizbeach versus lower part of the Mizbeach. That's called mechitza, the division point. This concept of a dividing point is not applicable to a private altar. Dichtiv, v'hoyso horeshes ad chatzi ha-mizbeach. This pasuk, the reshes, is a reference to the grill work that was on the side of the mizbeach that was at the halfway mark. So this idea of halfway mark is something only that applies only to ha-mizbeach. The word ha-mizbeach is a limitation idea. Richutz Yodayim V'raglayim. The need for the washing of the hands and feet before the sacrificial service took place is not necessary at a private altar. Dechtiv uvekarbosam el hamizbeach yirchatsu. Once again, you see the hamizbeach expression, which is a limiting expression to this central altar. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a new topic with a new marking, a house marking, that is explained in the outside margin, the Nosei Mivneh. We see this house with a number 1 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, and this house marking is designed to bring out that there are two versions of Rami Bar Chama. We have to point out before we go any further that the text of the printed in the Gemara itself will not be our focal point, but rather that which is suggested on the outside margin in the smaller print. There you will see a second house form with a number 2 in it, because as we go on in the Gemara, we will not be using the Gemara text itself, but rather that which is printed on the side to replace the Gemara text. In our note under the Nosei Mivneh heading, you see it says Beis Lishonos Barami Bachama, two versions of Rami Bachama Hamlamdim that teach Dafalpi de Kotoni Diyesh Mechitza Bedomim Bebama Gedoyla. Even though the Mishnah tells us that there is a need of division, the split of the mizbech between upper half and lower half, which defines the different locations of blood sprinkling per different types of korbanos. That division, delineation, it's true, it applies to the central mizbech, but lo tamid hu kach, not always. That will be explained in the Gemara. So we are focusing on the issue of mechitza bedamim. Omar Rami Bar Chama. Now we shift to the outside margin. Loi shonu ela bekotshi boma gedola. The teaching of that there is a division between upper half and lower half of mizbeach, that one has to be careful to sprinkle the blood of sacrifices at their respective appropriate location, either upper half or lower half, depending on what kind of sacrifice. This is true only with regard to things that were sanctified b'kodshei b'magdola v'krivo b'magdola. They were sanctified initially to be brought at the central altar and offered at the central altar. Avol b'kodshei b'magdola. If one had an animal that he sanctified with the intent of bringing it at a personal altar, v'karvinu b'magdola, and he ended up in actuality bringing it at the central altar, ein chitzui. There is no need for being meticulous about which half, upper or lower half. There's no restriction. Mosiv Rabba. Rabba asks, and he asks from a Tanaic source, Chozo v'shoik utrumas lachme toida. The tithe of the Chozav Ashok, sections of an animal given to a Kayin, and the separation of the 4 out of 40 loaves of a Korban Toda, Noagin Beboma Gedoyla, the Ein Noagin Beboma Katana. They apply to a Boma Gedoyla. And when we say they apply to the Boma Gedoyla, that means even if they were sanctified to be brought at a Boma Katana. Nevertheless, the fact that it was sanctified to be brought at a Boma Katana is of no consequence. It doesn't create any leniency or flexibility. You still are restricted to the restrictions of a Boma Gedola. So with that in mind, we see that even though something may have been sanctified for a Boma Katana, if it's being brought at the Boma Gedola, it has all of the halachas of a Boma Gedola, including our topic of Mechitza L'damim. The Answer, in other words, we now want to defend Rami Bar Chama. Emo, so rather say, the source, state the source as follows. Nohagim, these things, Chazav Eshok, Chumas Lachmei Tova, etc., Chitzu B'damim, are Nohagim B'Kodshe Bama Gedola. They apply only to things sanctified initially to be brought at the central Mizbeach. The Ein Nohagim B'Kodshe Bama Ketana, but they're not binding for things that were sanctified to be brought at a personal altar, even if they may have been brought at the central altar, just like Rami Bar Chama said. Iko Diarmi. Now the second version. Omar Rami Bar Chama. Lo Yishanu, the teaching of Mechitz of Chitzui B'dam, Mechitz L'damim, Elo Bizman Boma Gedola. This applies only during the era of the restriction of Boma Gedola, which means during the time period of Isser Bomos. Avo Bizman Boma Ketana. But if you're dealing with sacrifices at the time of allowance of personal altars, afalgav de karvinu beboma gedola, even if you happen to offer something at the central altar, ein chitzui, there is no din of mechitza ledamim. It all, according to the second lashon, everything depends on time period when something is taking place. Mosiv Rabba. Rabba asks, Chozer v'shok utrumas lachmei toda noagin beboma gedola v'ein noagin beboma ketana. The expression noagin beboma gedola sounds like they are binding at the boma gedola even though it might be a time period where there is an allowance for private altars. Now, Rami Bar Chama, according to the second Lashon, suggested that if you're dealing with a time period of allowance of private altars, then these restrictions don't apply at all across the boards, even by the Boma Gedola. According to the source, when you're dealing with a Boma Gedola, you have all of these restrictions, including Mechitza B'damim, even though you're talking about a time period when there's an allowance for personal altars. So this would be a kasha on Rami Bar Chama. Answer, Emo, Noagin, the restrictions are binding, Bizman Gedola. The Enoagin Bizman Ketana. And they're not binding when the Ketana, when the personal altars are allowed, even if you happen to be processing the Korban at the central Mizbeach. Now, this whole approach, at this point, we go back into the Gemara text that brings us to the second line from the bottom. This whole approach, the approach of Rami Bar Chama, is Upligo de Rebbe Elazar. This is at odds with Rebbe Elazar, the Omar Rebbe Elazar, Oilas Bomas Yochid, Shehechnisa Bifnim, an Ola, the sacrifice that's dedicated to a private altar that you slaughtered at the private altar outside the Beis HaMikdash, shechnisa b'fnim, that you brought it into the courtyard of the Mishkan, kaltua mechitzos l'chol davar, it's considered contained or absorbed within the walls, within the courtyard, for all matters, including mechitza l'damim. So, whereas Rami Bar Chama said that something that was, when you're dealing with the time of heter bomos, then all restrictions fall away with regard to the processing of that sacrifice, because it's a time of heter bomos, or it was sanctified to a boma ketana, Rabbi Elazar says, to the contrary, he says that once something is brought into, no matter what the background is, once something is brought into the area of the central altar in the Mishkan courtyard, it then takes on all of the restrictions that apply there too. And hence, Rabbi Elazar is at odds, or is arguing with Rami Bar Chama. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.